Hey, this is Karen, Coach's Corner Chats, and this is the first Me and the Three. I'm joined by Juan Garcia, Molly Grisham, and Randy Waldrum. I'm going to let them introduce themselves, and then we're going to get right to it. Molly, you take it away first. Give us a little background on where you're at and what you're up to.
Absolutely. So I spent about 20 years in higher ed, was a college soccer coach and a communication professor, and eventually just a college soccer coach. And then about 7 years ago, walked away from that and started my own business, where I now work with teams and organizations all over the country on things like leadership and team building and culture and conflict resolution. I often describe my work as I deal with the speed bumps. It's the stuff that slows your team down. And can I come in and help you identify what are those things you just keep having to slow down and deal with? And can we get rid of those speed bumps so you can go as far and as fast as you'd like? So I now work with lots of different sports and lots of different industries, but a team is a team. And once you understand how to get a team to be high performing, it applies across all industries. So excited to bring that to the conversation tonight. I certainly get to see some of the challenges that coaches face at lots of different levels in lots of different sports. And there are some absolute common threads in all of that. So excited to be here and excited to join the conversation.
Juan, where are you at and what are you up to?
Yeah, so kind of where I'm at right now, I'm officially a free agent. So just kind of looking for my next opportunity to see kind of where life takes me. But before this, I was an assistant at Nicholls State down in Louisiana, coached also at Bethany Lutheran out in Minnesota. And then life has kind of taken me a couple different areas where I was running my own club out in Virginia, coached high school for about 9 years as well. And then before that, I actually did a year of community service with AmeriCorps and Triple C, had to travel around the country, do different service projects, kind of add a bunch of different tools to my tool belt that way as well.
And then finally, Randy, where are you at and what are you up to?
I was just sitting here thinking, Juan has hit, let's see, north in Minnesota, south in Louisiana, out east in Virginia. I think your next gig, Juan's got to be out west somewhere. You know, you'll have all four corners. I'm here at University of Pittsburgh, going on year seven coming up. Doesn't seem like it's been that long. And I'm also continuing on as the Nigerian women's national team coach as we try to get them through the Olympic qualification and hopefully the Olympics in Paris. And so I've been quite busy with that. I've just recently started a new coaching community on Telegram, and it's really just a way to give young coaches an opportunity to kind of all come together in a collective and share ideas and coaching activities and coaching issues. Some probably would be interesting for Molly. I'm sure those kind of questions will come up. But more, I've always loved coaching education and mentoring because I was fortunate to have some really good mentors as a young coach. And so that kind of gives me an opportunity to give back. And it doesn't always have to come from me. We've got several hundred coaches on it now, and they're starting to share ideas. And I love seeing them start to communicate. And somebody's got a problem and say, hey, who's got an idea on this? And you know, the next coach chimes in and says, well, I do this. And that's what it's all about. Some networking and just helping us grow the game.
So the idea in my head of this is it's almost like a basketball game, female side in college, four quarters. And then we'll have an overtime period. So four questions, I'll kind of throw them out. And then it's just kind of a chat session about that. And then we'll move on to the next one. So first question that I have for you is, it's the start of the new year, so you hear a lot of things about resolutions and habits and routines. What is, when people think, and I'll go to Molly first. Molly, what is your one go-to that when you say there's a habit or a routine that I have kept in my life and I've just continually done, what is that one thing?
Yeah, I think it's typically how I start my day. I think that for me, just kind of easing into my day is really, really important because I recognize I have a finite amount of energy and I have a lot of people that need that energy and a lot of people that count on me. And whether it's the masterminds that I run for coaches or one-on-one coaching or leading retreats and events, if I jump right out of bed and just get after it, I'm done by noon and my day is not done at noon. And so being really intentional of just carving out 30 minutes to sit in my recliner and have some quiet music on and drink my tea and take my vitamins and take a deep breath before I start the day is so critical for me. And I try to do that whether I'm on the road with teams or whether I'm at home, but it makes a big difference for me just choosing how I'm going to start my day. I can't necessarily control what's going to unfold during my day or even how my day is going to end. But if I can have some influence in how it's going to start, it makes a huge difference for me.
Juan, what about you? What's a routine, habit, something that you have in place that has made a huge impact for you?
I think just kind of having an overview or mapping out my day where I know exactly I'm going to dedicate an hour to the gym. I'm going to dedicate an hour to kind of go out with the dog, kind of have some fun that way. But just a way to kind of decompress, clear my mind, and making sure that kind of everything else that's going on around me can kind of just take a step back, and it's still going to be there when I get back in an hour or so, and then I can deal with it then. But just kind of having that little bit of me time to kind of decompress and kind of take a deep breath and just know that everything's going to be the same whether I'm here or not.
Randy, what about you? What's something that you have in place that you've just kind of leaned on to keep consistency and keep rocking and rolling?
Well, sounds like I need help from these guys. They seem like they have a better grasp on life and knowing how to approach everything daily. You know, for so many years, my mind has always been about training and getting better and making our kids better. So, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, I don't know what the case is. I get up in the morning and my thought process goes to immediately, you know, how we're going to get our kids better. So I think my go-to is I've always had a clear picture of what I thought the game should look like. And I think I've always been able to do a good job of communicating that to our players and getting the buy-in. So I'm always trying to think about new ways within that, that way of playing or that game model, if you will, always trying to think of new ways to, innovate that, to challenge our players, you know, to come up with a new way to, you know, to show and to teach what we're trying to do. But my mind right now doesn't click off too far from the soccer field, and that might not be a good thing for me. But that's just kind of the way I'm built. Yeah.
Yeah, one of the things that I always have struggled with when it comes to routines and habits is I feel like too many. Mm. And so I've been kind of following Jesse Itzler, and he says every 3 months, pick one habit and crush that for those 3 months. And then the next 3 months, you add another one. So I've got my one where every night now I sit down and read my devotional and my Bible and all that kind of stuff. And that's my one thing that I've checked off every single time. So it's kind of like, I love the idea of sitting in the recliner and just, it's almost like you and Juan and Randy almost had the same idea of like, all right, where do I want to head off? And like, you know, Juan knows I need to hit these. I'm going to hit the gym. I'm going to do this and do that. Molly knows that I've got a lot more than just half a day that I got to put in. And like Randy said, I've got the idea in my brain, but I got to get my players, my coaches, staff, everybody on the same page with that. So question number one, down and out. Question number two. 2023. So Juan, when we look back, you just talked about kind of being a free agent, but let's look back at last year, a lot going on. When you look back, what's the one thing that you grasp? Like when you look back at 2023, what is it that is Juan in 2023?
I think just kind of that self-awareness and that confidence and knowing what I'm doing and what I believe in is kind of the right direction for me. Whether it's working with players one-on-one and kind of helping them find that spark again and enjoy the game again if they've lost it, or whether it's helping players kind of rebuild their shots, kind of find that confidence in themselves and their routine and kind of making sure that they're kind of bought into everything. I think just that overall in terms of kind of that progression and finding that confidence in myself as a coach definitely comes into play in 2023.
When you look back at 2023, is there a moment or an experience or anything that you look back and like that's that one point that stands out for you?
Probably. I mean, in terms of 2023 was a whirlwind in terms of going from D3 to D1, mm-hmm. and then just kind of learning that routine all over again and seeing what that grind is like. But then finding ways that I can still kind of apply my ideas especially in one-on-one settings with players, kind of developing those relationships. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter the level, as long as you can kind of develop those relationships and kind of get everyone to buy in and win influence that way, then I think it goes a long way.
Randy, we saw the success with Pittsburgh. We saw the success with the Nigerian women's team. When you look back at 2023, is it beyond just like what was your takeaway from the experience with both levels, or just your experience in life and everything from 2023 when you look back at it?
Well, first of all, I'd say I'm really blessed because we got a great staff here at Pitt, and I've got a guy that's helping me with Nigeria that, you know, does a really good job on that end with me. And we were very fortunate that both teams had a lot of success at what the challenge was for 2023, the World Cup for Nigeria, and then Pitt, us getting to the final eight, you know, this year in the NCAA tournament. I think for me, when I think back about it, though, as a coach, personally, for me, it taught me a lot about perseverance, because I think, you know, I've had national championship teams at Notre Dame, and we've had winning teams for a long time there. And, you know, I've had success at various levels. But it was the first real, real challenge where you had an entire nation that thought you were like a horrible coach, you know, with Nigeria before the World Cup, and the preparation was so poor, and we had done poorly going into that, and battling the federation for the way they were treating the players and all the negativity that went with it. It's a lot of pressure, especially when you're representing a country. And to kind of be able, I learned about myself, I could get through that, you know, and persevere. I mean, we've all gone through difficult times in our lives, and it's how you manage to get through those moments and how you cope with it. I think that it really helps you grow, you know, as a person, because, you know, every year we continue to grow as coaches as far as X's and O's, and the game changes. We always pick up new ideas in life. But I think this one really, you know, I've been challenged before with some things that didn't go as well as I had planned over my years. But this one was really a hard one with what was going on with Nigeria, and at the same time trying to manage a great group of young women that I'm working with here at Pitt to help them achieve their goals as well. When I look back at 2023, obviously, it was very successful for both of those teams, and that part ended up being great. The people in Nigeria now think I actually know how to coach a little bit since we did so well. And so we've completely turned that around. But it was a really big challenge. And I think it's important for coaches out there that listen to understand it's not going to be always, you know, great for you during a career. We choose this profession, and sometimes it's hard, and sometimes there's some things that you think you may not be able to overcome, and you do. And so I learned a lot about myself through perseverance, I think, in this year.
You mentioned success, and now people kind of see you as a better coach. Does that help? Does that make it easier? Or does that just, in your mind, does the bar continue to get risen, rose, whatever the word is? Does it always, are you continually having to get to the next rung on the ladder?
Well, I think you have to in this business. You know, it's never enough. There, ultimately, whether you're coaching in college or you're coaching at a national team, there's only one team that ends up happy, you know, the team that wins the national championship. So I think that's, you know, you always want to continue to push and set the bar higher and higher. I think the thing that it changed is the perseverance part for me showed me that my way and the way of doing things, the belief I had in feeling like I was doing it the right way, kind of at the end, it came through, and it makes you realize, yeah, I contrary to what other people or the outside forces may be saying, you know that the path that you're on, the way you're doing it, is the right way. And ultimately, to see that win out, I think becomes really, really important. And of course, we got to be open-minded enough to make some changes in the way we do things when it's not working. But that part was, I think, the most satisfying thing, is to see those young women of Nigeria come together and do so well at a World Cup with such a lack of preparation. And now, you know, these players at Pitt continue to grow this program that we've been kind of transforming over the last few years. It was an exciting year for us.
Molly, when you look back at 2023, what is your kind of almost daily your light bulb moment for you in 2023?
Yeah, I think I knew going into 2023 that I spent so much of the pandemic just holding on for dear life. Just like, when will I get face-to-face with clients again? How many clients am I going to lose? Also just dealing with the overwhelming volume of coaches who are struggling. And there was just only so much I could do. Like, I couldn't get on a plane and go be with them and having to do all of that remotely. And so I think in 2023, that was just a year of risk for me of like, let's just try and see what sticks. And so got in the studio and produced new content and created new frameworks and just tried to say to coaches, here it is. Here's all the stuff you've been asking for. Launched some new coaching groups. In 2021, I had one mastermind for college coaches. In 22, we did two. 2023, we've got three. So it's just continuing to take risks and saying, I'll create this. I'll put it out there. And coaches, if this is helpful, sign up. If not, don't sign up. And then I won't do it again. That's how I can learn. That's how I can test things. But just taking a lot of risks and trying to give coaches the resources that they're telling me that they need at a really high level and hopefully at a lower price point where a large volume of coaches can maximize those tools. But it's been really fun to see coaches join those groups and use those products and just feel like they're in a healthier place and that I get to be a part of that journey with them.
What's the process like to go from gripping for dear life to literally sounds like almost like jumping off a cliff? Like you've gone from one end of the spectrum to the other. What was that experience like to say, all right, let's just go and do this?
Yeah, I think I would bring it back to your first question of like having that consistent check-in with myself on a daily basis and understanding like, okay, you've had this conversation with yourself now for 3 months. You know you want to do this. You're hearing this from your clients. Take this risk. And the reality is I've been doing this work for 7 years and most small businesses don't make it past 3 years. And most small businesses don't survive a global pandemic. And I did both. And it was just kind of that constant like self-talk of you're doing something that a lot of people don't get to do. So let's lean into it. Let's go full speed ahead. Let's take some risks. You've got a good safety net now. And let's see what happens. And here we are a year later and I'm just thrilled with the risks that I took. And it's all been really life-giving for me and I hope life-giving for the people that I get to serve.
Yeah, it almost has like a same theme for all three where, you know, it wasn't like a singular moment, but it was an experience over some time, some of it easy, some of it not so easy, you know, transitioning from D3 to D1, Randy talking about like going into a World Cup where you don't really know what was going to come of it based on maybe the preparation wasn't where it should have been, to having continued success at Pittsburgh, to Molly kind of going all in. And it's been kind of like that for me. In terms of the, like last year, my goal going in was let's get an episode out every Tuesday the entire year. And I was able to do it. And the fact that for me in my head, I was like, well, there'll be, you know, 52 coaches that would like to talk.
Yeah.
And what continues to surprise, kind of like what Molly said, is just put it out. Like even this, to have the three of you, you know, who I have mass respect and love and enjoyed, you know, following you guys online and just watching games and all those types of things and what have you, is just like, I don't know, just crazy, kind of just like a punch in the gut. You're like, holy cow, they'll take the time to take, you know, 30, 45 minutes and one, share their journey, you know, support me online, all those kind of things. It's been really, really cool. Almost kind of like what Molly was talking about, of just kind of taking that risk. But I just love the idea of perseverance, risk. You know, Juan's talking about relationships and like the importance of like focusing on the players, even, you know, wherever it is that he ends up next with that. So two questions down, two more to go. So this next one, as all of you are, we're all problem solvers. What do you, when you look at just the climate of sports, coaching, what can we improve on? Like, what's something that is a, I guess, actionable, like a doable, something we can control, something you think that we could do better? I don't know if it's us personally, maybe it's something, if we put something in place, what could help us, you know, society, coaching, what thing right now in your head you think, man, if we could have more people just do this, maybe things would be a little bit more positive moving forward. Randy, I'm going to go to you first on this one.
Yeah, you opened a really broad topic there, you know, because, you know, you can look at that from a standpoint of a coach having a team and what can we do, you know, and ask of our players and our staff to be better. I think the other way you can look at it is for the game itself, what can we do to make the game better in this country in particular, but even globally. And I found that out at the World Cup that is poorly as things are in Africa with Nigeria. We're not the only country that still treat women as a, you know, as a second tier entity, and the equality is not there. So I guess I would answer that kind of big, more broad picture instead of Pitt picture or Nigeria picture, and just look at it like, how do we grow the game? You know, how do we make the game better? What's one thing that we can do? And I think it's a little bit of a societal problem. And I think it's just an accountability. You know, can we all be more accountable for whatever it is our role, you know, is in what we do? You know, and I use that as an example, can my bosses in Nigeria be more accountable for providing the resources and the things needed to those players so they have an opportunity to maximize, you know, their ability and be treated, you know, better than a third class citizen or whatever. Same with our players at Pitt, you know, it's like holding them accountable, you know, to take responsibility off the field, in the classroom, out in the public, on the pitch, wherever it may be, to just be more accountable. And I think a lot of that we see trickle down into our youth game now, where I think we're not holding a standard of expectation and a standard for a lot of our young people. And it's too easy now to say, I'm not playing, so I'm just going to leave this team and go to another team. Or I didn't make the grade in the classroom, so my mom's going to come take care of the teacher for me, you know, that kind of thing. And so I just really broad stroke, I think if we can kind of hold players and people accountable, whatever that responsibility is for what they have to do, I think that would be one thing that we could hope really start to see a difference. And with where we are in the world today, I don't know if it's gone too far away that we'll ever get it back to probably the way it was when I was growing up, where that was kind of a household thing. You know, mom and dad just held all of our kids accountable and to be respectful and to learn how to fight for things and to grind things out when things weren't good and getting a good work ethic. And I think it all kind of ties in together. So I'd like to see some, you know, some accountability and everybody with whatever your job is, be accountable for that job.
Juan, I'm going to go to you. What is something you look at and go, can we get better at this? This has got to help out in the long run.
I think especially as coaches, I think the two things I would probably pin down would be empathy and self-awareness. I think empathy in terms of, that was the one big thing that I really learned throughout my time with AmeriCorps, is learning how to put yourself in someone else's shoes, and especially when they're not having the greatest time. I think a lot of it is when we judge ourselves, we kind of judge ourselves based on our actions, and we judge everyone, or we judge ourselves based on our intention, and we judge everyone else based on their actions. And I think if we were able to kind of flip that around, then I think that would go a long way in terms of kind of understanding where other people are coming from or why they make certain decisions. I think that would go a long way. And then just that self-awareness piece, especially for players, as they're growing up in that college game or in life in general, the more self-aware you are, the easier it is to kind of understand that your words and your actions do have impact on everyone else around you and kind of your situation as well. So the more we can kind of get our players to be self-aware, the easier it is to kind of help them deal with those issues and kind of help the problem solve on their end as well.
Molly, to you, what thoughts do you have on this?
Yeah, I feel like we could talk about this for an hour. So feel free to mute me if you need to. I feel really strongly that particularly in the college game, and we're starting to see this trickle down, but particularly in the college game, we have to see coaches as being a part of the team and a part of the solution. And what I'm seeing at every level, maybe with the exception of Power Five football and Power Five basketball, but at every other level, it is like it's the team and it's the administrators, and then the coaches is this extra entity. And what I mean by that is coaches are being told things like, you can't talk about mental health. That has to be the counselor. So if they come to you crying, say nothing, send them down the hall. And coaches are saying, I recruited this young woman for like 3 years and she's been here for 4, maybe 5 years. And you're telling me I can't talk to her about this? And don't talk about physical health. That's got to be the nutritionist. You might body shame them. And again, coaches are like, but she came to me. She wanted to have that conversation. And I would think of it a little bit like a parallel of what we've seen happening with so many youth officials. It's like they're an hourly worker and we can abuse them. And if we can get back to the place where we see coaches as being an integral part of a young person's development, they're not the enemy, that we can see them as a part of the solution and we can get back to some transformational practices. But what I'm seeing from so many of my coaches is it's administrators and players in one column, coaches in another column. And so many coaches are saying, how do we get back to being connected to our players where we can have honest conversations and we can truly develop them and we can work through the hard stuff and not have to say, I'm sorry, I'm not allowed to talk to you about that. Go to the counseling center. When a young person comes to you in tears and says, I want to talk to you, we should be equipped to be able to have that conversation. And yes, maybe we need some resources, but we should at least be allowed to be a part of that. And I'm just seeing coaches being boxed out of those conversations left and right. And I think most coaches got into coaching because they care about the people that they lead more so than they care about their sport. Their sport is just a vehicle for developing their people. And when coaches get boxed out of those really important conversations, it changes the dynamics on a team. It changes the experience for the young person. And I think to Randy's point, I don't know if we can get back. I don't know if we've gone too far or if it's the pendulum's going to swing again, but I see coaches just being labeled as the enemy, as the villain, as the person, if we could just get rid of that coach, everything would be fine, rather than saying, let's look at this holistically. Let's look at this entire system and let's see the role that coaches can play in being transformational with young people.
Molly, can you come to Pitt?
I can. I've worked with some good ACC folks, so we can talk.
Well, I tell you what, you really did hit it right on the head. I do feel like, you know, as a coach, we're very, it's not like it was 20 years ago where we had all those conversations with our kids, you know. And you're right, the arena that we're in now, everybody is so afraid of saying the wrong thing. And you're not an expert in the nutritional aspect, so don't speak about it. You're not a sports psychologist, so don't speak about it. We have lost a lot. You've very, very well said on that. Yes.
Thank you.
Agree 100%.
Yeah.
So if that issue is there, how do you bridge the gap? Like, do you have to have more conversations like what we're having now? Do you need to have ones where are the parties going to be open enough to sit down and hear the concerns of both sides, if that makes sense?
Well, I think there's several things that have to happen. I think we have to get more coaches in administration. We are at many institutions, our administrators have never coached. And for many of them, they never played sports. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to get more coaches to, I often hear coaches say, like, I'm thinking about going to the dark side. What if we reframe that? What if it's not you're going to the dark side, but what if it's like you're going to help college athletics by making that and bringing a voice to that space? Because I do see a big difference between administrators who have played and coached versus administrators who purely approach it as a business perspective. But then I think we also have to find ways to bring administrators in to observe some of those conversations. So earlier today I had, again, I run these masterminds for college coaches, and we had one, and one of our coaches had what we call a hot seat, which means they just get 15 minutes to present an issue, a problem, a struggle. And then as a group, we just brainstorm everything that they could possibly do. And they said, I know this isn't normal, but I would just like for you guys for the next 15 minutes, just tell me what I'm doing good. I just need to hear that I'm doing okay. And for 15 minutes, it was just, this is how we've seen you grow. And you did this and you did this. And they just said, thanks. I needed that. You just refilled my cup. And one of the coaches messaged me and said, if only you could record that and show that to admins, that all coaches need every once in a while is a, you're doing a good job, keep it up. And coaches aren't hearing that from their admins. And so they're having to create their own communities and their own spaces where they have that kind of support and encouragement. But I think if we can rehumanize coaches for admins, that's the next step. We got to get more coaches in administration, and then we got to rehumanize coaches in the eyes of administrators to be able to start to make that shift.
I think that's something too. It's starting to pop up because especially with Jurgen Klopp, you know, taking the step, he's saying like, I'm done. I don't have the energy for it. And I even just put a poll up because it started to make me think. So I even put a poll like, have you ever thought about just quitting coaching? And 80% of the, I think it was like 100 votes. So 80 out of 100 had said, yeah, at some point I just, you talked about, we all get into this because of like Juan's talking about relationships and making impacts and, you know, like Randy, the opportunity to make such a huge impact on the women of Nigeria and just the ladies he's working with at Pitt and like his son and like the, all of the things that you can do. But at the same time, like you said, it's a bummer that we know we got to do better, but there's kind of a gap between those opportunities. Yeah. So
I tell you, I can give you a really good example. When I was at Notre Dame, I had my immediate sport administrator was a gentleman named Tony Yelovich, and he had been the offensive line coach for the football team when Lou Holtz was there. So I had an administrator for about 10 or 11 of my 14 years there at Notre Dame that could protect me, understood as a coach what I was going through, great relationship. We went to 8 Final Fours. We won a couple of national championships. And then he retired, and it went completely different, a complete 180 the other way. We got in a more corporate person. It got to where it wasn't enjoyable. And one of the reasons, you know, that I left Notre Dame to move on to another opportunity because I didn't have that person I could bounce the ideas, and he couldn't be the buffer for me to get the administration to know. So I think that was such a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. I think gone are the days when you can go to your administrator and say, I'm struggling with fill in the blank. Because it used to be your administrator could say, oh, I had that same problem. Have you tried this? Call this person. What do you need? Let's get you the resources. Now it's, let me document that because I have concerns about your ability to lead this program.
Yeah.
And it's, you have to have that safety net where you can walk into someone's office and say, I need some help. And you know that that's not going to show up in your end of the year review. And it does right now. It does.
Does it sadly come down to, this isn't one of the questions, but does this come down to sadly money? Is it like, it's such a big, especially you talk about Power Five football and basketball. Do we lose sight of some of the person because we're so worried about, we got to make it to a bowl game. We got to make money off of this. Is that, you know, NIL and all these other things that are out there, is that some of the issues that we're facing?
I think it is. And I think maybe where administrators have gone astray is that conversation probably does happen at when you're talking about like TV contracts. I get it. Like you got to win if you want your program to be on television. But then we've taken what applies to football and basketball and we've tried to apply it to everything else, and it doesn't apply to everything else. When you are firing your gymnastics coach or your golf coach every 3 years, you're actually losing money because the hiring process is really expensive. And you're losing tuition dollars because players are leaving. And so I don't think we're using the right financial lens for our non-football, non-basketball sports. I think most administrators, if they really wrap their brain around the numbers, would say, we do better financially when we've got a coach who's been here. When it's a legacy coach and they keep players in the program, this is a win for the university. But we've taken this model that tends to work for Power Five football and Power Five basketball and assumed it has to apply to every other sport, and it doesn't. And it's not working across the board. And at some point, I hope someone with a finance background will do a really good assessment on that, because we can't run every program like we run those exact same programs.
Yeah. I'm really lucky here at Pitt. I've got, my athletic director was a softball player. So, you know, she gets non-revenue sports versus revenue sports, and she's a huge advocate of that. So, and she is one that will send me messages after a win. Great job, Randy. Girls are doing it. Like I'm very, very fortunate that I've got one of the few really good ones that are out there right now. But I do think because of the money and the corporate side of Power Five football and basketball, you do see a lot of universities now going to a more corporate type athletic director or a more legal, an athletic director with a legal background, because there's so much money involved in it. So to your point, Molly, I think we do lose some of that hierarchy that has actually gone through the athletic side of it. It's now we're getting people that are more in the corporate side. And so we do lose that ability to have them to relate to what we go through every day.
I just want to turn to Juan real quick and then we'll move on to question four. But how does that, as a young coach looking for that, finding that next program, hearing things like this, how does that affect, like, when you go into interviews and looking at places? You know, you talk about let's go out west. Like, does that play into how does one find out about administration and what the support's like? Is that something that is on your, like, checklist?
Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, it comes down to research and networking. I mean, you take a look at some of these schools where that aren't that well off, that are struggling in terms of not being fully funded, things like that, that are a different set of problems at that point. So while they might be looking for like a more corporate type background, at the end of the day, if the school's in the red, especially if the athletic department's in the red, then it's a different set of problems in terms of not only being able to keep those people in those positions, but also bring in a full staff. It might be, you might have to run lean for a couple of years until you can kind of prove yourself. And at that point, then you're lacking resources that you need. You have to go outside and kind of figure things out that way, or be creative and think outside of the box. And while that might help you in the long run, it is a struggle to kind of get up off your feet and kind of dive in. And at the end, you end up betting on yourself, right? So sometimes that works out, sometimes it doesn't. The struggle that I have at this point is when it doesn't, it's not only affecting yourself, you're affecting those people that are under your care as well, that you're supposed to be looking out for and kind of helping mold their experience. Same thing like with youth and club, those kids only get to go through that experience once and then they grow out of it. So you're trying to make that experience the best as possible for them. And it's just, there's a lot of other factors outside of your control that make it difficult at times.
Question number four. I thought that conversation was awesome, by the way. Question number four. And Randy kind of pointed out with the getting a note from the athletic director saying, hey, girls are playing great. Love seeing how they're doing. I don't think we give gratitude and appreciation enough. You just talked about the coach that said, hey, give me 15 minutes of just positive feedback. So I wanted to give you an opportunity. When you think about it right now, who's someone that maybe you haven't said thank you to enough? And why is that person the person that pops into your head as someone that has been that impact that you're like, you know what, I should, you know, I think I've shown it, but maybe I haven't. Who would that person be and who would you say it to? And I'll throw this one wide open. Who would like to take that one first?
I think for me, it's anytime a coach chooses to work with me for the first time. Like, yes, you can look at my website and you can look at my testimonials and I can tell you I'm going to help you, but thank you for picking up the phone and taking that risk, because there is something almost sacred as a coach of choosing to let an outsider into your team, because that outsider can do damage real quick. We have all probably had like an athletic trainer who went rogue, or a strength and conditioning coach who went rogue, and you're like, you have to see yourself as a member of the team. So anytime I have a coach that just picks up the phone and says, I don't even know what I need, I just know I need help, and I've been told you can help, so what do we do? I think that takes a lot of courage, and I don't know that I articulate that to them enough, that I really appreciate not only their trust in me, but that they value their team that much that they would reach out potentially to a stranger and say, can you come help us be better, because we want to provide a better student athlete experience. I'm incredibly grateful for all of those calls, but I don't know that I articulate it on the level that I need to. So thank you for the reminder on that. There are some coaches I want to text when this call is over. because I do. I have immense gratitude for their courage to ask for some help and to allow that space for me to come in.
Randy, Juan, who wants to go next?
I can go. I mean, I think especially with how this year has started for me, kind of being able to go to coaches that have either like been a part of my coaching tree or been a part of my journey, just to kind of bounce ideas off of and kind of talk through things and kind of share resumes, portfolios, things like that, and always get feedback. I think definitely while I know that I can always go to them and they know that they can always come to me, it's not always articulated that gratitude piece. So there's definitely two or three that I've been going through probably heavily in the last month or so that definitely deserve that as well.
Randy, yeah. What about you?
Yeah, I guess mine's a little bit different in that, you know, my son is my associate head coach here at Pitt. And so with your own kids, you're always telling them how proud you are of them, you know, as the person that they've grown up to be and so forth. But I do think there's times that maybe I don't say enough of the job he's done, whether he's my son or not, the job he's done and the coach he's grown into and the impact he's had on our program here at Pitt, because he's done a lot of the work over the last 2.5 years that I've been back and forth with Nigeria. So an immense amount of credit goes to him for the success of the team. So I think he expects to be told I'm proud of him and all of that. But to let him know, it's not about your name that I'm telling you this, but the job you've done has really been an outstanding job here. And so that would be one. And of course, I think you can't tell, as Molly mentioned earlier, you can't tell your staff, overall staff, enough times how appreciative, you know, you are for all that they do and the part they've played, because it's winning is not about the head coach. It's you've got to have all the support staff and all the players. And there's so many people that are a part of making a program good. And if you don't have the right person in some of those places, they can derail your program, no matter how good of a job you're doing. So I think all of that's really important. But the other ones that I would say for me is kind of thinking back, you know, I was blessed to have a couple of really good mentors. One, a coach that gave me the love for my game was a gentleman in Irving named Simon Sanchez. It was my high school and my club coach. And unfortunately, he has passed away. But I was lucky enough to tell him, you know, we had a great line of communication to tell him how I felt about him and everything he did for me. But a couple of the others that I don't probably see enough and tell them enough would be Howard Patterson, that I played for at Midwestern State University. My college coach, I learned so much from him. And I probably haven't told him enough about that, what he's really done for me outside of being my coach at the time, but just giving me some life lessons and a pathway. And then the other one would probably be Shellis Hindman, that I worked for at SMU. Been a great mentor. He's kind of been in our corner, you know, as a family and in my corner as a younger coach when I first met him. So I think we've all got people in our lives that helped shaped us, and I think it's important to let them know. So like these other two on the call tonight, we're probably all going to be getting on the phone here afterwards and sending a quick text. Hey, just got reminded, I need to thank you for this, right? You know, I and the flip side of that, I will tell you, unfortunately, I had to go home last week for a former player of mine passed away. So I went home for the funeral last week to Tulsa. But I got to see so many of the young men when I was coaching on the men's side. I got to see so many of them that I coached back in the late 80s. And I had to actually apologize, to them, going like, I was such a bad coach back then. You know, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know sports science. I thought when we sprinted 110 yards in 15 seconds and jogged back in 30, I didn't realize you had to give rest in there. You know, we just started over. And like, I thought if I made them puke or I made them pass out that it was a good day. So I spent a lot of time apologizing last week for some of my downfalls as a young coach in the early years. But I think we can also thank players too, because as much as we hope to impact our players' lives, I've had so many players that have impacted my life as a coach as well. So probably too many people to thank that I don't do a good enough job thanking all the time. Yeah.
All right. We're going to head to overtime, and this is a little fun one. So I'm going to name four different animals. And I want you to pick one that you think best fits you and why. So your options are a lion, owl, dolphin, or eagle. I'm gonna go to Juan first. So again, lion, owl, dolphin, or eagle.
I'm gonna say dolphin. I think reason being, my ability to kind of be able to pivot and be agile in terms of problem solving and situations. I think being playful and confident as well. And at the end of the day, I think out of that group, dolphins would probably be the most passionate of that group. And I think that kind of describes me as well.
All right, Randy, lion, owl, dolphin, or eagle?
Where do you come up with this? I got to ask you. You know what? I would probably say eagle, because I think the eagle is always flying above and has a big vision, you know, overlooks everything and has the opportunity to really see, you know, when the attack needs to be made or when they really need to hone in on one thing. So I think that would best describe me. A lion's probably a little bit too aggressive for my nature. The others might be a little bit too passive. So an eagle probably that oversees things a little bit more. I think I'm a little bit bigger picture with that kind of a personality. Yeah.
All right, Molly, you're last up. Lion, owl, dolphin, or eagle?
This was easy. I am the owl for sure. I'm just a natural noticer, a natural observer. It serves me really well in life to be with a group and to just be able to notice things that others haven't noticed, and then to figure out how do we move forward now that we've noticed that. So I often feel like I live like up in the corner of a room where an owl would be. I'm just taking it all in. So I didn't even write down the other two after you said owl. That was easy. That's me. I'm the fly on the wall for sure.
Well, this has been awesome. This has been better than even I could have imagined. I want to really thank Molly, Randy, and Juan for taking the time to hop on here with the Me and the Three. And I'm excited for the future episodes, and I can't wait for this to go out. I'll go ahead and shut this thing down. This is Kieran, Coach's Corner Chats with Molly, Randy, and Juan, Me and the Three, and I'm out. Peace. Hey, this is Kieran, Coach's Corner Chats. Thanks for checking out the Me and the Three Episode 1. Molly Grisham, Randy Waldrum, and Juan Garcia were awesome. I hope you enjoyed it. I'd love to get your feedback. Let me know. Hit me up on Twitter @CoachesLet'sChat and let me know what you thought. Let's go. Peace.